Okay, so it is time for another podcast, and I am super excited today because I've got a special guest, and it is officially the very first male that we have ever had on the podcast, so it's even more exciting. So I'm Rachel Vogt, and you already know me. Like, you find me on Facebook, you can find me on Instagram, you can do the vote for parties, whatever. I got empowerment classes happening, and I got a sexual wellness group. You gotta be 18 years or older to be a part of. So that's where you can find me. So my special guest today is a dear friend of mine. Oh my gosh, we go back farther than some of my current friendships, because that was 16 years old when we went to Australia. Yeah. Was that how old you were too?
I was 17.
17. Okay. So my dear friend Amaya, please tell them a little bit about who you are, where you're from, what you got going on.
I am Amaya Wilson. I am from a small town, Hartsville, Tennessee. You've never heard of it. It's about an hour away from Nashville. That's the closest thing that you would have heard of. I'm just I'm a regular guy. Like I said, I've known Rachel for, 2002? So 18 years now. We met on an overseas trip, but since then I have gone to college and left college and done various things, been married, divorced, kids, and all manner of such things. I also host a podcast called Drinks with Dub. Dub is a nickname I picked up in high school. Very casual, laid back bar conversation type podcast. You can find that. You can look me up, Drinks with Dub, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, which I'm never actually on, but you can follow me there if you so choose. But excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. Like, super excited to have you. For a myriad of different reasons, but we joke about this all the time, but I wouldn't have any other way to kick the podcast off, honestly. So I knew we were going to be instant friends because you took such a gamble when we first met each other. So, like you had said, circa like 2002, 2003, something like that, right? I was at LAX. I came from like Omaha, I think. And this was the first international flight of my life. And you sit down next to me and you say the very first thing out of your fucking mouth. So you think R. Kelly did it?
I mean, it seemed like a good conversation starter at the time.
I didn't know what to say.
It was summer of 2002. The R. Kelly trial was a big deal. I was, like I said, I was 17. Mm-hmm. That was actually my second people-to-people trip. So I'd kind of done it a little bit and kind of knew the lay of the land. And I knew that, on that particular trip, for people that don't know what people-to-people is, it's an ambassador program that high school kids go on. They travel the world, yada, yada, blase, blase. Awesome experience. And so, but the way they do it is there's usually a big group from one state, about 30 of you guys from Nebraska.
Yeah, something like that.
And then there's about 10 from another state. And they, because they want you to meet people not only around the world, but in the United States as well. Mm-hmm. And there is always one random kid. And it turned out that year I was the random kid from Tennessee because it was
Indiana mostly.
Indiana. The other group was from Indiana.
Yeah.
And so I was the random kid. So I literally never laid eyes on anybody until I got to the LAX airport. And so we met a few people, didn't meet Rachel, but sat down on the flight next to her and we had strapped in and do the whole thing. And I just kind of looked at him like, what should I say? And I just like, do you think R. Kelly did it? And here's this little white girl from Lincoln, Nebraska, next to a big black guy that she's never seen being asked about R. Kelly. And we've been down ever since.
Yeah, because I will tell you that the universe really played its cards right, because if you remember specifically the little tinier white woman who was sitting next to me on that flight would probably not been so receptive to that conversation, if I'm being frank.
No, probably not. She probably would have told me that he did it.
Potentially.
And used some very not nice words, probably, but,
Yeah, definitely not close with that girl no more.
No, not at all.
No. Yeah, so...
And then you got me breakfast.
That was a terrible flight. That was the flight that we got stuck with, like, our trays overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even remember how that happened, but and for some reason we put up with it. So that was a 24-hour flight. We flew into Australia. We were there, I think we were like 23-ish days or something like that. We spent most of the time there, and then we went over to New Zealand. That was an incredible trip. So I don't think that I did know. I mean, I knew that we were from different areas because we had in Nebraska, our Nebraska group, we also had people from Iowa, which isn't saying much, but in terms of location, I don't think that I knew that you were a random kid. Like, I just thought it was because you had Indiana and we had Tennessee, and like, I just thought that that's what, the way it was.
Yeah, no, like I said, I don't know how it works out that there's always a random kid that's not a part of the groups, but the reason it worked out that way for me is because I went on my first trip in the summer of 2001 mm-hmm. with some other, you know, friends of ours that we've met through people to people.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine, Joey from Lincoln, before we met. And so did that trip. It was awesome. My mom paid for it. And like, this is your reward for doing good in school and being a good kid. And came back from that trip, and as I'm unpacking my stuff, I'm like, ooh, I want to go next year. And so she's like, yeah, I don't know about that. So the deal was that I had to get a job, because I was 16 at the time, get a job, and I would have to save my spending money. So this conversation's happening around June, maybe early part of August. And so that's the plan. I went out and got a job, and I'm going to save, you know, my spending money to go on this trip. And then September 11th happened. And at that point, you're not getting on a plane and going anywhere.
Right.
And so it was very low. At least I would have some sort of knowledge or contact with people, you know, instead of just sending me with complete strangers, I at least knew the people that were in charge from the year before.
Yeah. So that's interesting, for sure. So, because your first trip, if I remember, that was like you went Europe. Is that where you went for the first one?
Yes.
Yeah,
we did Italy, France, Austria, and Switzerland.
Yeah. So I just think that's I loved that you had been on a trip before. I so wish that I would have done more, because it was more than I ever expected it to be. And my favorite thing about it was 1,000% of the people that I still talk to today. It's just crazy that we have this ability to do that. It was a great trip. What was your favorite thing about the Australia-New Zealand trip?
The Australia-New Zealand trip. I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff on that trip. And I don't know if I think one of the things that I loved was that everybody that we encountered was so laid back. And like, I remember in particular, we did the Sydney Bridge climb, mm-hmm. and the guy telling us, like, or I don't even know if it was the guy that worked there. Somebody was talking to us about the bridge climb. It's like, yeah, we, you know, me and my friends did the Sydney Bridge climb. Like, we didn't go like do the official thing. We just had a few beers and decided to climb the bridge. And I'm like, should you be telling us this? We're teenagers. Like, this is not, I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but okay. We'll.
Yeah, Aussies are very laid back, that is for sure. That, I mean, like, when we talk about, like, doing a reunion, I'm like, why are we not actually planning it? Because they make the same, almost exact same trip. Like, you can do the adult thing, and let's go back to Scooby-Doo Island and all that shit. Like, it was just, it was an incredible trip, for sure.
Yes, that's something, Scooby-Doo Island, that's something that... Really? Like, is it that big of a deal to walk on the same bridge? Because... I don't know, but...
Yeah, that was... I mean, I think what was really special about the fact that we were... for me, all it was is that it was the movie had just, like, come out. Like, if it had been, like, a 10-year-old movie or a 15-year-old movie, nobody would have given a shit. But, yeah, Tangalooma Island, something pretty special. Like, I highly recommend everybody go there. It's just really neat. Australia is just neat in general. And then we all got super sick on the Great Barrier Reef ferry.
Oh, God. I do remember that.
It was like a 2-hour boat ride, and we were having so much fun for like the first hour, and then the second hour, everybody was miserable. Oh, my gosh. Did you snorkel there?
I'm sure I did. Yes, I did, because I have some pictures. I had like an underwater camera.
Yeah.
That I took specifically for the snorkeling. So
yeah,
got some pictures somewhere.
Yep.
In a like old school photo album.
I know. Like when you had to actually print them off and hope that. I remember this so vividly that I had a Ziploc bag of film canisters.
Yep.
Yeah, I had, because you had to pack them, so I had like 20 of them, and you just have to carry them in a Ziploc. Oh my god. And no digital yet, so you just had to hope and pray that you took really good pictures and everybody had their eyes open.
Yeah, because there's no going back. No. Me and Joey were actually just talking about that this week, about the difference in, like, you know, just taking pictures, and because now everything's on your camera, on your phone or whatever. Like back then, like, you just had to, like you said, hope and pray. And like imagine texting somebody like, hey dude, I need you to meet me at the Eiffel Tower and retake this picture because you blinked. So like, I need you to hop on a plane.
Oh my god. Yeah. So yeah, that was, it's definitely, I thought like, you know, when I was growing up, like it would be like something I would never forget, which it is, but it's definitely not something that I remember to think about nearly as much as I thought I would. But it helps, you know, from time to time seeing you guys on Facebook, because then that will remind me too. Or like my memories just came up the other day where we had uploaded some of those like water boat pictures and stuff. So it's nice to be able to have that too. So, oh my god. All right. So we come back to reality. We decide to be human beings and adults, and that's where we're at now. So tell me a little bit about your podcast. Like, what is your fan base, and like, what do you like most about doing it?
To be honest, I don't know what my fan base is. I'm just making it up as I go. But it started from, I used to do music. I used to rap because I'm 35 and I'm black. So at some point I did rap. That's just. I just kind of discovered, you know, people seem to be responding more to me on social media than the music itself. And so it's kind of like, all right, what do I do with that? You know, and podcasting seemed like a natural fit, you know, like just me spouting off ideas and topics and conversations. And it's changed a lot. I guess I started doing it about 4 years ago. And at first it was like more of a talk show. Like I'd try to find guests to interview about various things. But, you know, that's hard because I don't live in an area with, like, I guess, known people or, you know, so it's trying to find like local people that are doing stuff to promote, to get them to do the podcast. And so switch that up to just a more of a conversational style podcast, and did that. And then my girlfriend Brittany, she did an episode with me that people seemed to enjoy. And at the time we were doing the Facebook Live stuff a lot, and us kind of going back and forth and bickering about random stuff. And so it's just kind of grown from there. And now we have, you know, I guess a little podcast crew of regulars. It's really just me, her, and a few of our friends that are at the house all the time anyway. So at various points we decide, you know, all right, let's plug up the computer and the mic and, you know, record this. And, you know, people see, you know, there's people out there that seem to enjoy it because it's just us just kind of shooting the shit and them picking on me for various reasons. And I think everybody likes that. So.
Is your podcast and you get picked on? That doesn't really seem very fair, I would say.
It's not. And I try to remind them. I try to tell them all the time, it's Drinks with Dub. Like, I'm Dub. This is my show. But they don't really go for it, you know. It's just, so, and I'm outnumbered. It's all women. So,
yeah.
What can you do? You go along for the ride.
Well, I'm grateful you have a perspective of that, I suppose. So, how have things been different for Tennessee this year?
Tennessee this year has been the epitome of, I don't even know, it's like freedom. You know, because we're in the South and the Bible Belt and, you know, America. Mm-hmm. So the fact that someone is telling people that you need to stay in the house or that you need to wear a mask, like, people are extremely resistant to. And the COVID numbers keep going up because no one wants to be told that their freedoms are not, you know, being met or, you know, I mean, you know, I don't want to get political, but, you know, this is Tennessee. This is heavy Trump country. It's a red state. So anybody telling anybody that, you know, to do something they don't like, it's no, this is America. And I'm down the street from my house, there's the little town square. And this weekend there was a cakewalk, and there's like 85 people, you know, at least in the, you know, probably a space smaller than one house. And they're standing shoulder to shoulder and walking in a circle and giving out prizes, and nobody down there has a mask on. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff that you just shouldn't do. Like, I get going to the store and, you know, your regular life, but let's not just crowd in somewhere like a can of sardines and then wonder why the, you know, why the numbers are going up.
Yeah. Yes. Ironically, Anderson and I, the podcast that we just filmed this week, since she's not on maternity leave yet, since we're just doing this in the future, of course, I told her, I said, I don't really want to talk about it, but I want to talk about it because we're a red state too. And it's the same argument, you know, and that's what it's frustrating, because it's like, you can be a human being who's annoyed with something on your face and still do it. But I don't want my argument is absolutely not about somebody stepping on my liberties and telling me what to do. I'm not, I feel like that's a tantrum reason. It's a tantrum reason to not participate.
Yeah. That's all it is. It's just being contrary for the sake of being contrary. Like, you told me to do it, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. But that's very much that counterculture right now of the cancel every. I mean, it's not even about if it's not my way, it's wrong. It's, and liberals are bad about this too. Like, it's not, this is, like you said, it's not a political conversation. If it's not my way, then I have to, like, bye bye. Like, that's where we're at. It's too heated that way.
Yeah, very much so. And I personally hate cancel culture. I still listen to R. Kelly's music. I still watch movies that Harvey Weinstein produced. I read an article sometime this year that, like, I guess millennials were, like, just discovering the movie American Pie and were outraged at how raunchy and, you know, sexualized this movie. I'm like, no, that's a funny movie. Like, you need to chill out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's not go back and be mad at stuff that already happened.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you're speaking right to me, because, so not only does that remind me, because where this kind of originated for me, it was like with, who shed some really powerful light on it was Dave Chappelle when he did his Sticks and Stones special. And then, ironically, last night, Tony and I watched the Letterman episode with him, and it was just, he's so unbelievably tapped in to the correct language that people need to hear about what it is and what it's not, that it's just like how in the world can you expect human beings to grow if you don't have forgiveness for the person that they were at the time, especially if they're saying, like, that's not who I am anymore, and but everything is so documented, you just can't, you can't escape it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing it's like, you go back earlier this year, I think it was this year, when Kevin Hart was supposed to host the Oscars. And they're mad at him for jokes that he had told 10 years previously that he had already apologized for. It's like, you know, like, where, like you said, how can you grow if, like, once you make a mistake, that's it, you're done, can't be anybody anymore.
Yeah, and you're held under that microscope. It's just, it's crushing, but... Yes, you know, it's hard because, like, what you're just mentioning, like R. Kelly music, this is just a for instance. I had, so in my VIP page, my group page, my business page, I pre-schedule posts because it's efficient, and it's nothing inauthentic. It's just my regular, like, you know, Man Candy Monday and Thursday Dose of Woman or whatever. Well, I have pre-scheduled this woman's quote by J.K. Rowling, like, 45 days ago or some bullshit, and so something's come out since then, apparently. I had no idea. She had said something that was transphobic, and so this post goes up, and so, you know, somebody on my page comments about how they can't stand that. She feels that way or whatever, so I responded with just a simple, I apologize if it offended you. I didn't know that was going on. I just wish her the best in her beliefs, as long as she feels good about what she, there's nothing I can do about that, whatever. So that lady responds with, I appreciate the sentiment, because the quote was like, I had to rebuild myself from a rock bottom or something like that. She's like, oh yeah, no, I get value from the quote, I just don't appreciate the person. And I'm like, all I wanted to say in my 2018 mentality was, well, did you burn all your Harry Potter books? Did you, the same thing that you had mentioned, is just like, you can't stand in your glass house and throw stones. I mean, just that heavily. Like, I just don't know how to gently say it, I suppose.
Yeah, and I mean, there is no gentle way to say it, because that's what people do, is, they sit in glass houses and throw stones, because that's what, that makes them feel better, I guess, the hope is, if I can throw enough stones and shine a big enough light on everybody else's flaws, then nobody has time to look at what I'm doing wrong. Because I'll be the first person to tell you, I am a lot of things, perfect ain't one of them.
Right.
So, I really don't have room to judge anybody for the wrongs that they do just because they're different than my wrongs.
Yeah. And I think that, this is all opinion-based, of course, but I think that's the perspective shift that I'm trying to hope for crying out loud, is that it is too much of the very cliche phrase of, when you're pointing your finger, there's three more, four more, whatever you want to classify your thumb as, pointing back at you. And the self-reflection is where that growth really, really happens. And people are just so hyper-focused on the external needs to change. Everything else needs to change to benefit my comfort, instead of doing the hard work on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, it's ridiculous.
It is. But, sadly, that's the world we live in right now. You talk about self-reflection, and, here's the thing, is I've said it for years, that a lot of times the only way people will change their way of thinking is when the situations are brought to their front door. My ex-wife, who I have my oldest son with, when we first got together, her family was extremely unhappy about that situation because I'm black and she was white.
Mm-hmm.
And they, wanted nothing to do with me. The woman that raised her, her grandmother, I think that boy or whatever. And, fast forward 12 years into the future, and I see her posting things on Facebook and speaking out against racism, because she has this grandchild that, she knows and loves and doesn't want harm to come to, or doesn't want people to look at differently. And she is, in that time, gotten to know me, even though, me and her granddaughter are now divorced, she sees that, I like to think generally a good person. Yes, I have my flaws and this and that, but, for the most part, I just want to get up, go to work, live my life, and come home to my family.
Right.
But it took that child coming into the world on her front doorstep to make her step back and be like, maybe some of these things aren't okay. What if somebody were to say these things to him? Or what if he was in that situation? How would it feel? And I think that's really where growth comes from, and how change, happens.
Yeah. It's exactly what it is that it has to be their experience. And unfortunately, you can't replicate a lot of experiences for people to get them to that growth. So it takes a larger human being to say, well, how will I find that then? If I can't be in it, how will I find it? And it's so simplistic. Like, it's everywhere for you now. There is literally subcultures on your Netflix and your Hulu to make sure it spotlights other cultures and other views. And I cannot stress enough that for me, I don't really believe that I was happier or healthier or enjoyed things more, as hippie as it sounds, until I started to have those experiences of other people's cultures and ideas, because it almost even freed me from the limiting beliefs that I had been pressed upon me growing up in this one viewed vision family that I could only have that experience to.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and you get that from all aspects of society. Society tells you what you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to act. And you think, it's easy to think about that in terms of looking at someone else, like, oh, you know, that's not right. They don't have to be this just because, you know, they're black or they're white. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's hard to turn that self-reflection back onto yourself and realize that, I don't want to say victim, because that's not necessarily what I mean, but that you're a product of that same sort of mentality that you've been told through various means that this is what you're supposed to be. You know, for example, when I went to college in Indiana on a very well wasted academic scholarship, but that's a whole nother story. But, you know, like my first day or so on campus, and the school that I went to was overwhelmingly predominantly white. You know, there was not a lot of black people on this campus. And I am 6'3", probably at the time about 220 pounds. God, that seems like my chappier days, but that's beside the point. But I'm standing in some sort of orientation or registration line or whatever, and this white lady walks up to me and introduces herself, and she can't wait to work with me and get to know me. And I'm like, okay, cool. Who exactly are you? And she's somebody from the athletic department. I don't play a sport. Like, what made you walk up to me in this crowd of people and say, this guy's an athlete and I need to introduce myself to him? Like, we were just standing around. But, you know, if you looked around, ooh, white person, tall black guy, ooh, he must be on the basketball team. So right. That's why he's here. You know, little stuff like that that you don't think about, you know, it's like, you know, it's those thoughts and those ideas that are being pressed upon you, like I said, consciously and subconsciously.
Yeah. I was just telling Tony the other day that one of the most profound things I had recently read was an article by a woman of color, and it was like things like white people need to think about. And there was a lot of really great ones, but the one that really sticks out to me was like for women with cosmetics, how the color nude is a white color, like, or a white shade or whatever. And for me to be like, I never even thought, wouldn't have even fathomed, like, picking that as like the staple of a nude versus how many other beautiful shades are there for skin color. And it's just those tiny things. Like, if people, I'm not going to label anybody that might need this kind of love in their life, but if you could plant those tiny little seeds, like, they're just so blinded by these larger conversations that have escalated, that are, of course, you know, most of them very, very important, but they're just barking. These other people, they're just barking instead of listening, and tiny things like that. That's all you had to hear. All you had to hear is how important it is to be recognized as an important color of skin. How about that? So stupid.
Yeah.
So you have, because Brittany is your current girlfriend. So all yes. Three of your children are mixed children. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. How has that been raising mixed children?
I don't know. It's odd. It's odd at times because, Jackson, the baby, and Micah, the oldest, they are both very light-complected. Like, you can look at them and tell they're mixed. You may not immediately assume black and white, but you can tell there's different things mixed in with them. And then Dwayne, the middle child, which is my quote-unquote stepson, he is darker-complected. Like, when you look at him, you will assume he's black before you assume that he's mixed.
Gotcha.
And so it's been interesting because I grew up as, you know, I grew up being black in America. Mm-hmm. And their mothers grew up being white in America. And it's a different mindset. You know, me and Brittany have had the conversation several times over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, since we really, I guess, started getting serious about how having Dwayne, you know, because this is before Jackson came along, how having Dwayne has opened her eyes and she sees things differently now and can now even look back at past situations and see them through a different lens, you know, because now she has these, you know, a lot of people, you know, especially here in the South, if they see mixed, they see black. Mm-hmm. They don't see the white side. They just see black. And so she has these children now that she's trying to raise in this world, and she sees things through a different lens. It's the same lens I've seen things through for, since I was about 9, I guess, would be when that first occurred to me. I was about 8 or 9 probably when my mom first had to sit down and have a conversation with me about race.
Yeah.
You know, so like I said, that's something that I've had, you know, in my mind for, you know, close to 30 years where, you know, it's cliche to say, you know, but as far as racism is concerned, if you're white in America, there is the ignorance is bliss sort of, you know, attitude. It's like, this doesn't necessarily personally affect me. So, you know, I know it kind of happens, but I don't think it's that serious. I've not seen it. People don't say those things around me. So it's easy to just kind of pretend that, you know, it's not a big problem until, you know, you're, like you said, until it comes to your front doorstep. Mm-hmm. And you now see things like, oh, you know, maybe this is a problem and maybe, you know, something should be done about it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So you say your mom talked to you, she sat you down when you were 9. Do you feel like, retrospectively looking at that now, do you feel like 9 was the right age, or do you feel like it should have happened earlier?
Well, alright, so, like I said, I was about 8, maybe 9, but I had a friend at school who lived relatively close to me, it was a white kid, and we had determined amongst ourselves at 8 or 9 years old that we wanted to come over to each other's houses to play. That I can't remember if I was going to go there, he was going to come to my house or whatever, but we had this idea. And so I think I talked to my mom about it, and she's fine. And said that they were going to be out of town going to his grandmother's. Okay, no problem. Well, I don't remember if we saw them in town or if I talked to him at school afterwards or whatever, but it was discovered that that was not true. Mm. There was no trip to the grandmother's. They were in town 2 minutes away. And, you know, so she had to, you know, she sat me down and had that conversation, explained why this had happened and why things like that would happen throughout life. And, you know, that's just kind of the sad truth of the way the world works. And, you know, that's a conversation that, you know, me and Brittany have definitely had it. Me and Chesley, who is Micah's mom, we've had it, you know, at various times, is, you know, when to broach that topic and how to broach it. And because they're children and you want them to stay children as long as there's a part of you that wants them to stay children as long as possible. But then there's a part of you that doesn't want them out in the world being naive, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it's very difficult, and you're always kind of on the lookout. I think you become paranoid and, you know, hoping that things don't happen so that you don't, you know, because it's, you know, the fact of the matter is that children at some point are going to lose their innocence. And it's a debate of, do you want someone else to take that innocence away, you know, out of your control, or do you want to have control over their innocence being taken away and be the one to do it? You know, it's a very, I don't know, touchy or tricky situation to try to navigate yourself through, because it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah. Well, I think you had a really interesting perspective in that. I mean, because you're right, like, whatever you would choose to say, lose your innocence, become jaded, whatever, like, you know, it's a sad rite of passage that we all go through. So how much control do you want to have over that? Because when you do step into that responsibility, if you look at it from that perspective, you know, it is, like you had said, very important to lay down the important foundations about what will directly impact your children, but then also to try to do as much countering to that of planting the seeds of whatever you can, you know, so it's not a mentality of survival, because that's what it has been for such a long time for that type of story. Would you not agree?
You know, parents and adults, you know, my mom, you know, sat me down and explained to me what to do if you're pulled over by the police. You know what I mean? Like, that's a conversation that she had with me about, you know, letting them know that you're going to reach for, that I'm going to reach for my wallet, and, you know, that the insurance and stuff is in the glove box, and do you want me to get it out? And, you know, that sort of conversation, because, you know, we do live in, you know, we live in an area. I know the cops around here, you know what I mean? I went to school with some of them, but you never know. It does, you know, the entire police force is not racist and is not trigger happy, so to speak, but it doesn't take the entire police force. It only takes one guy, one time in one situation, and a life can be, you know, one life is taken and several other lives affected forever.
Right.
You know, and that's not fair, but it's the world we live in, and it's something that, you know, I imagine it's, you know, I know it's happening all over the country, that, you know, black parents are sitting and having these conversations with their teenage sons, especially about what to do when you're pulled over by the police, because it can be the difference in life and death. You know, because you don't know if this particular officer on this particular day, even though he's probably pulled over thousands of people, and everybody, I think, knows that your insurance and registration is always in the glove box. And that's what you're going to ask for when you, like, do you have your insurance and registration? It's in the glove box. They're going to reach to get it. But one time that somebody thinks that that's threatening or suspicious is all it takes. And you don't want, you know, you don't want that to be you. You don't want that to be your kids or your friends or whatever. You know, you don't want that to be the case. So you teach them what to do and how to counter that situation before it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. There's absolutely different conversations that people are having. I mean, I can honestly say that I know that my dad would have never had to have that conversation with my brother. Like, that's just a fact. And we both said we live in red states. So what's the difference? And, you know, you have to have those hard conversations, and you have to really ask yourself. Like, I find it just crazy. I find it crazy sometimes when somebody is a client of mine who I know that we vastly, vastly have different views on some particular types of things. And it's just, like, I feel like it's great. Like, I'm so grateful that they don't have a problem tuning in or listening to me. And I'm hoping that maybe I can plant some seeds. But it's too much. It's too much. I can't.
But you have to.
You do have to. You do. I would say, like, as a man, no less, who's living in the South, this is a political year, which I'm not really interested in exhausting what I probably already know about some of your opinions on that. It's more so, like, there's that you can't argue that obviously government's such a huge part of what's shaping the United States, and I mean globally that happens too with government too. But, like, what would you say would be the best thing for human beings in general to, like, I mean, stop hyper-focusing on that would be Rachel's suggestion, but that's just mine. Get away from the politics. What would people need to do? How do we have better conversations? How do we experience one another in that regard?
Yes. Well, one thing I say is, one, to find common ground. You know, if you can find common ground with somebody, to just talk about that, you know what I mean? That can open so many doors. Like, you know, sports, for example, you know what I mean? You could be, you know, take two people that politically could not be any more different, you know, they disagree on every topic there could be from a political standpoint. Mm-hmm. But they both like basketball. Mm-hmm. Get them to sit and just talk about basketball. You know what I mean? If you can have that conversation about basketball, you can start to see that, you know, hey, this basketball thing is interesting to both of us. Perhaps there's something else that's interesting to both of us. Movies, perhaps, or maybe music or cars. And you start to realize that no matter how different this person is, they're still a person. And that's, you know, that's what brings people together, is the fact that at the end of the day, we are all just people. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, generally speaking, we all just kind of want the same things. We want to have a family or a job and a career and a home. And we just, you know, those basic simple things in life that really bind us all together, whether we know it or not. Mm-hmm. And two, you talk about the government. You know, I think that we need to, you know, this is me being crazy at times, but we need to realize that the people are the government, and that we live in a vastly different time than when the ideals that we hold to, so to speak, were written. You know what I mean? Like, I say this all the time especially when you bring up race in this country. You know, everybody loves the 4th of July. The fireworks and the parades and the hot dogs and the red, white, and blue. It's a great time. We all love it. And we celebrate our freedom and the Declaration of Independence. And I point this out not to be cynical or, you know, whatever, but it's just the fact, and it shows the difference in the times. You know, today. All right, where am I picking up?
So we had a small snafu there. Yeah, so you're talking about like the 4th of July and the fact that we're celebrating our freedom and independence, and that's where you're at.
Yeah, okay. So we celebrate our independence and the Declaration of Independence, and Thomas Jefferson wrote, you know, the Declaration of Independence. We hold, you know, we the people, you know, hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. He wrote those words, and that's great. But Thomas Jefferson also owned slaves. So when you talk about, like, the man that wrote he literally wrote the book on freedom.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He felt that it was okay to own other human beings. So did he really think that all men were created equal if he felt that at least he was, you know, above other people enough to say that he owned them? You know what I mean? So, like, let's, you know, take a look at where we are now and the world we live in, and make rules and ideas and morals that apply today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, because it drives me crazy because people talk, you know, we both live in red states. And so, you know, everybody loves the good old fashioned Second Amendment. And, you know, sorry, kid was coming down here. He changed his mind. But anyway, the Second Amendment, and like, you can't change the Constitution of the United States. And like, you realize that an amendment is literally a change.
Right.
Like, that's literally what it means, that they made a change.
Right.
And, you know, I point out, you know, everybody's like, it's the Constitution. Like, the Constitution said that me, a black man, would not have been a full person. I would have been 3/5 of a person. So, like, that's the document that we're basing our lives on.
Right.
It was written for a time that doesn't exist anymore.
Yes.
You know, like, the world we live in is not the world of the Revolutionary War. It's completely different. How about we start playing by some different rules?
Yeah. And I feel like I just don't understand why we cling to that. Like, I used to feel this way very much about religion before. I mean, I'm still not religious. I'm spiritual now, just this year. But, you know, the argument I had as a child was like, and this was like kind of at the height of when like gay rights was coming out and people wanting to get married and so on and so forth. It was like, I didn't understand much, so this statement is slightly ignorant, but why were we worshiping this one thing that had not been updated either? Same thing. Like, things have changed. Nothing's the same. This book was interpretation anyway, but it's the same philosophy, because you talk about the Second Amendment, and I had heard somebody at some point say, like, same thing, right? Like, at that time, they could not have anticipated having full automatic weapons. We're talking about something that you have to stuff a bullet into, and it takes 15 minutes to reload, and so on and so forth. And that is an incredibly valid argument, so I don't know why we're not talking about things like that more.
Yeah. You know, it's a, the world changes, you know. The world changes, people change, and when people change, you know, ideas need to change, you know, and interpretations need to be, like you said, updated, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, we talk about, and, you know, we talk about a lot of things like their ancient history, and in the grand scheme of things, they're really not ancient history.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, my house is... I could probably throw a football if I loosened up good. I could throw a ball from my house to what used to be the black high school in this town. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh God, that's so old. That's, you know, it's ancient history, that, you know, segregation. And like, no, my mom went to that high school.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, yes. This ain't like something you just study in a textbook. Like, you can go out and talk to people that remember this, right, and grew up during this time.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's a good thing in a sense, and a bad thing in a sense, because there's people that remember that and have learned and grown from it. Mm-hmm. And then there's people that remember that and cling to it and wish for a better time, you know?
Yes.
Like, you know, from the first time he said it, you know, make America great again, you know, just not even politically, you know, believe what you want. But my question was, you know, the again, like, make America great again. When are you saying that we need to go back to be great?
Right.
Like, do we need to go back to like 2003? Do we need to go back to like 91? 65, 50, you know,
yeah.
How far back are we talking about going? Because that might not work out so well for me personally,
right?
You know,
right.
If you go back too far.
Yeah, yeah, so that's exactly what it is, and so much more, of course. And so I love that you said that, you know, about, that's exactly, I mean, so these are not linear, but it's just an example. I had said this in my empowerment class too, like, when people think about how much they don't have, this is one example, like, indoor plumbing is less than 100 years old. And so I'm like, if you think about it, like, legitimately, like, your grandma's grandma was probably using an outhouse. So when we think about, like, that short history, like you're talking about, of human beings in general, do you feel like as we become a couple more generations, do you think that that will be helpful or hurtful to the progress of trying to heal relationships between races? Because you won't be as close to the actual event that is so raw. I mean, I know you can't speak for everybody, but...
Yeah. Well, no, but I think it depends on how the conversation evolves.
Sure.
And how the conversation is continued to be had. Because I see it every day, because I work with teenagers. You know, I'm a manager at a fast food restaurant, so I work with teenagers on a daily basis. And to see the change in the past 20 years from when I was a teenager, and how social media has changed the way we interact with each other, it's mind-boggling, you know, the difference. You know, like I said, you know, I live in a small little one-horse town. There ain't shit to do. You know, that's just the way it's always been, probably the way it always will be. But, you know, when I was a teenager, we would pile into our cars and everybody's going to go ride around town. And you get out and you ride around, there's, you know, 20 people hanging out at McDonald's in the parking lot. And there's some more people at the car wash over here. And there's a gas station here people would hang out. And it's just a bunch of people just kind of hanging out, chilling. And you stop like, oh, there's so-and-so. Let me stop, holler at them, see what they're doing. And you talk for a little bit. And, you know, hey, what y'all into tonight? Ah, nothing, you know, such and such say they might go over here. I'm like, all right, well, if they do that, hit me, you know, text me, or, you know, call me or whatever. And just even now, like, that hanging out doesn't exist. Like, everybody's on social media and Snapchat, and the same, like, seven people make their plans with each other without even exploring other options, so to speak. Like, when I went out on Friday night, we didn't have a plan. It's just, hey, let's go out and see who's out and see what we run into, because, you know, we weren't as connected. Like, our parents thought it was crazy that we could text each other, you know what I mean? But, you know, back then, not everybody's phone even could text, and they didn't want you to text them or call them before 9 o'clock, because right. The minutes wasn't, hey man, don't call me before 9 o'clock. My minutes ain't free. I got the cheap plan, you know, nights and weekends, baby. You know?
Yeah.
So you weren't trying to use up those texts and minutes to just call and do a phone tree or whatever to stay in touch with everybody. But hey, where you finna be at? Minute mark. All right, cool. And you'd go to Minute Mart and meet up with them and see what was going on.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, if the conversations can stay in person, I think it'll be a good thing. If the conversations continue to stay online, I think it will be a bad thing, because we all know keyboard gangsters.
Yeah.
People feel way too empowered to say things behind the keyboard that they would not say to your face.
Yeah.
You know, like, if we were face to face having this conversation, would you say that to me? Like, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to know me at all, know anything about my background, but I'm a pretty big guy. Mm-hmm. Would you feel comfortable with the same attitude face to face with me? Chances are you probably wouldn't. But yeah, because it's behind a keyboard and a screen, we feel it's okay. And so what happens is hate gets spewed, and more hate and more hate, and people react to the hate, and they take that hate in, and then they go out and spread more hate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's good and bad in everything.
There is for sure.
Definitely a bad.
It is. And it sucks that it's come to what it is, because, you know, I mean, I watched that Social Dilemma documentary, and one of the most poignant things out of it was, like, you know, like, these founders that they're interviewing, they say, they're like, you know, nobody can say that we would have ever saw that it came to what it is, but it is what it is, and it ruins lives at this point. And the intention of it was to bring people together, and it's just so much the opposite. And it's just amazing to me that the protection of the screen actually fostered that kind of environment of impermeable anything, judgment or retribution or anything, instead of, I mean, I've just been a lost white girl on Facebook watching puppy dog videos and crying about that kind of shit. Like, I know that that's not how algorithms work. I mean, that's how algorithms work, is you'll see more of what you get, but it's just like, were you out searching for that? Like, why? Why? I don't get it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think some people do search for that kind of stuff on social media and the internet in general, just to kind of have something to bitch about, or to prove how woke they are, or to, you know, prove their point, I guess. You know what I mean? One thing I'll definitely say about social media is there used to be, it's still a saying, but I don't think it applies anymore, is they used to say, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words.
Right.
That is definitely out the window now, because any picture from anything can be, even if it's not manipulated, it can be misrepresented. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, you know, everything going on right now, the whole kneeling during the national anthem has been, you know, a big thing over the past few years. And however you feel about it, you feel about it. But, you know, I saw several pictures, you know, from people that supported Kaepernick and the other athletes that were kneeling. They would post pictures of Trump and, you know, his hands would be by his side and be like, oh, look at him. He doesn't put his hand over the heart during the national anthem. I'm like, how do you know the national anthem is being played during that picture?
Yeah.
Like, it's literally a picture that could be anything. There's no, you know, or maybe you took that picture like right before he put his hand up. Like, I don't know that he stood there the entire time like that, but you're taking this picture and using it to further your own agenda. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, there's the old saying that men lie, women lie, numbers don't lie. You know, there's also a saying on the flip side of that. People say numbers don't lie, but liars use numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can take this information and shape it and do, you know, make it fit what I want it to fit.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, like that's not how facts are supposed to work.
Yeah, that's exactly the truth of it. And I like that you kind of full circled that with, you know, again, it's both sides. Both sides, they step out, they make it to their own benefit, and so on and so forth. And quite ironically, just circles us back to that conversation of maybe it's more conversations you should be having with yourself, more hard questions you should be asking of yourself. Like, does this, and here's the hippiest thing I'm going to say during our entire podcast as we're getting ready to wrap up, is that anger that comes out of people, that whatever it is you're feeling, disgust, shame, guilt, there's only two ways to feel in the world, and it's only good or not so good. We convolute that with joy and happiness on one side and worry and fear and anxiety on the other side, but they only boil down to the two. And so when you feel that ickiness, y'all, all that means is that you are not currently in alignment with the person you say you want to be. That's why you have the discord. It makes perfect sense, because if you felt good, you'd feel good. You're trying to be who you're trying to be. So when you have that urge, that inkling to type something hateful, just ask yourself why you're feeling that way first and foremost. And that's the trick, in my opinion, is that we've conditioned ourselves to know that we act out of habits, or not to know that, I guess, that we just act out of habits. And when you put the filter in place to actually just observe and decide who do I want to be, how do I want to interpret this message, and most importantly, how am I going to reciprocate my answer, I suppose, then that's when change happened for me, was when I wasn't acting out of that programming you talked about earlier. I was deciding for myself instead of what everybody else had said I should be thinking, I guess.
Right. Yeah. You know, and like I said, you know, that's, you know, I think everybody has to sort of come to that own, that realization in their own way.
Yeah.
You know, social media, like, you know, we've been talking about, it's easy, you know. Pick up your phone, click, 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 thumb, 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 bam. Thoughts out there to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the kicker. Here's the kicker that nobody wants to hear. Nobody really cares about your opinion. Yeah. You know, and, you know, this coming from a guy who hosts a podcast that's literally just me giving my opinions about shit.
Right.
Nobody cares. Like, it amazes me that there are people that listen to my podcast, because it's just me and, you know, me, my girlfriend, and our friends just kind of spouting off random shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's important, and it's really not. It's what we do to get away. You know, it's what we do because we have jobs and kids and bills and all this stuff. And you know what? For an hour or so a week, we just want to sit and shoot the shit with each other.
Yeah.
And we record it and hope it's entertaining.
Right.
And people do find it entertaining, but, like, don't come to me for, like, facts and,
right,
you know, to, like, I don't want to necessarily shape your view of the world. Like, I'm just giving you a little slice into my view.
That's really powerful, I think. And honestly, what I think we need to wrap that up with, because that's what it is, too. I feel that way, too. You know, when people say, oh, my God, you're healing me or whatever, and I'm like, nah, that's not my job. I'm not your healer. My job is just to give you, like, some perspective on how to gain the tools for yourself so then you can do it And ultimately, that's what it should be anyways, because it's all, yeah, it's all opinion-based and whatever. This was a remarkable conversation. I'm so grateful that you gave me your time, that you gave me your experiences, that you were willing to be a part of the podcast. Wrap it up and let them know one more time where they can find you, sir.
Like I said, you can find me on, you know, Facebook, Drinks with Dub. I have a Facebook page. You can like that. Instagram, same thing, Drinks with Dub. Twitter, you can find me. The podcast is literally available everywhere that podcasts are available. I record mine through Anchor. I think Rachel does too. And it gets distributed to iTunes and iHeartRadio and Google Podcasts and basically anywhere. Just search it and you can find it. And like I said, it's me, my girlfriend, a couple of our friends shooting the shit about random things and just trying to have a good time for a little bit. And I think that's really my goal with the podcast, is there is enough